Gamish Bros. We are doing the Open World Extravaganza. So as everyone knows, in February, like, three games came out. But hang on, let me introduce our host.
Yeah, back up. Whoa.
We got Thomas here.
Hello.
We got Nathan.
Hey.
We got Philip.
What up?
So as everyone
guest
knows.
Guest host Philip, friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
And general awesome dude.
Relative. So as we all know, three open world games came out in February of 2022 that are all AAA. And so open world games are doing just fine. They don't need your money. They're doing just fine. But before we talk about that, I wanted to do what our original episode topic was going to be, was the idea of missing the boat on a game. And wanted to talk with you guys about what is a game that you felt like you missed the boat on. And this was an opportunity to go back and not miss the boat on that game anymore. So, somebody want to go?
I'll go first. So, I don't want to say I missed the boat on a specific game. I would like to say I missed the boats. I missed multiple boats.
Plural.
It's weird. I was a PlayStation guy my entire life. And then I went to college. For some reason, was like, oh, Xbox 360.
Sure.
Everyone's playing Halo.
Yeah.
Let's buy it. Everyone's
Modern Warfare.
Call of Duty. Yeah. So I then became an Xbox guy. I've been an Xbox guy since then. And then one day, my brother, sitting right over here next to me, basically said, like, hey, you should borrow my PlayStation. There's a bunch of games that you've never heard of that you'd probably like Ghosts of Tsushima, like Horizon Zero Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the biggest open world guy ever. Like, I've platinum Red Dead Redemption 2 three times.
Yeah.
Like, I'm obsessed with open world. So I missed the boat on PlayStation exclusive games that I didn't even really know existed. So that's kind of my missed the boat, and I was able to borrow his PS3.
Yes, my PS3, which runs Spider-Man.
So I played Spider-Man, I platinum that. I played Ghosts, I platinum that, and I was like, oh my gosh.
You platinum Spider-Man and Ghosts?
Yeah, good job.
Me too. Now my PlayStation has that record. It thinks that I did it.
No, I created. I didn't want to have him credit because he's what I like to call an achievement pleb. He doesn't understand that, like, there are.
Yeah,
like,
you don't
he doesn't get
Andrew.
My credit.
He doesn't get
my credit.
Ooh, that one in Spider-Man getting the 100 hit.
Yes.
I got sweaty.
Yes,
I got sweaty
dude.
Doing that one. The 100 hit.
Because there's the achievements, but then you have to go in game to find all the. Where it's like, oh, you need to. What's the jump called where you hold right trigger and tapping, you like blast off?
Yeah, when
you
like launch.
It's like
the launch.
Do 10,000 launches. I'm going to be here all day for this.
Yeah. The 100 combo was wild.
But there were so many games that I had just like another series that I would love to play, but I haven't because I'm an Xbox guy. I'm a huge, huge Tomb Raider guy. Like, I love every Tomb Raider. I've never played an Uncharted. I've never once played an Uncharted.
Yeah, they're a little bit.
I really want to like get into that. So I would say that's kind of where I'm at. I've missed a bunch of games that have been PlayStation only, and man,
yeah,
like still to this day, like Ghosts of Tsushima is still one
insane.
Of the greatest games I've ever played.
I mean,
and
what
I went years without even realizing it was a game.
Oh, so good.
Well, it came out in 2020.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Did it?
Yeah, it hasn't
2020?
Been that long. Yeah,
but still.
It yeah,
but still.
I think it was 2020.
So
amazing game, nonetheless.
Okay, so Philip, you played Spider-Man, you played Ghosts. You didn't play any of the. Did you play Last of Us?
I played half of Last of Us. It was a little too linear. It wasn't my thing. And I'm not a big story guy.
True.
So, like,
No.
Yeah. That's the running joke.
I thought you love stories.
No. If I have quit games because they do not let you skip, like, story cutscenes.
Yeah.
If I can't hold X to skip the cutscene, I'm quitting the game.
Okay, I have to tell you, there are a lot of JRPGs out there that do not allow any kind of skipping. And also,
is so selfish as a game developer. Like, let me choose.
I would love to just set up a camp, like a hidden camera, and watch you sit through.
The Japanese developers say,
I would have Googled, can you skip cutscenes? It would have said no, and I would have deleted the game.
The Japanese developer is saying, for your own good, I'm taking the
My least favorite thing about skipping cutscenes is when you want to skip, but it's like a two button sequence to skip as opposed to one button. They do this in a Death Stranding where you have to hit the button to like tell the game you're going to skip. Then you have to hold a button to actually skip. And it's just, it's atrocious.
So you have to like hold B and then it does a, like a little circle, then hold A.
Yeah, it's something. I know that it's two buttons that
they're
you,
like maybe their Cheeto fingers slipped on B, but if they really want to cancel, then they'll hit A.
Yeah. I thought about this for a while. So Andrew told us, like, here's missed the boat. Think about something that you missed the boat on in your gaming history. I never owned a GameCube.
Ooh.
So for my miss the boat, I am going to say, and I don't know if you guys would consider this a miss the boat because I don't know how big this got, but I am going to say Mario Sunshine.
Uh-huh.
Because it looked so cool to me. It looked so cool to me, and I never got to play it. So this was right at the end of the GameCube for me was like right at the near the end of high school and the beginning of college. And so like new game systems and new games are just like not front of mind at that point in your life.
Ladies.
ladies are front of mind. And then like Philip said, like once you realize all your buddies are playing Halo and Counter-Strike, everyone in our dorm played Counter-Strike, that became your reality. So the GameCube just, and there's also a little bit of like, I'm a man now. I don't play Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like I'm a real man now. I'm out on my own.
GameCube was for kids. Yeah. Xbox and PlayStation were for adults.
Exactly. And so that transition kind of happened for me with the GameCube. But dude, every time I saw a commercial or a clip or something of Super Mario Sunshine, I was like, this looks dope as hell. But also at the same time, I'm a man now and I can't play it. So I like would step back from it, but,
it's the one where he has the bubble machine.
He wears it on his back.
It's like the pollution cleanup
thing. Dude, it's a great game. I played it at somebody's house one time. It's a great game.
It's awesome. Yeah. That game is like, it's insanely hard.
I did miss the boat. Yeah. I truly did miss the boat, but, anyway, that for me was my miss the boat. And,
did you get a chance to play it? Or nah?
Maybe once with like a friend, but I mean, honestly, when you look through the whole GameCube catalog, that's all missed the boat for me. Like all the big GameCube. So like the Smash Brothers Melee or whatever, missed the boat. Super Mario Sunshine missed the boat. Whatever iteration of Mario Kart they were on missed the boat. The whole GameCube experience was a giant miss the boat for me.
And okay, one of Thomas the most underrated boat. Resident Evil games of all time, Resident Evil Code Veronica.
Oh, that was on game. Code Veronica. So
it came out on Dreamcast first.
It was on the GameCube.
Okay, good. Yeah. I just had to get that out there.
Because we got a Dreamcast, so yeah. I could specifically
that,
play
Code yeah, that Veronica. That game is
it's
just
great,
lovely.
And it gets forgotten about.
And it's like the last like original style Resident Evil.
Thomas and I are going to do a random
Resident Evil
podcast.
Will you guys do that? Can we put that
3 hours
together? Will you guys do like a
talking about how after Code Veronica things just really
we
started
did a,
to fall
we did a five, good, we did like a 5 hour chapter for chapter Final Fantasy VII episode. Okay. And well, if we did that, y'all can do
could
a Resident
easily
could
do a Resident,
easily do a Resident
dude,
Evil.
Dude, that's another gravestone quote for Thomas. Resident Evil Code Veronica actually came out on the Dreamcast before it came out on the GameCube.
Oh, actually, he's right, on the Dreamcast. It did. So, I missed the boat on BioShock.
Wow. Okay. Huh. Yeah.
I never played BioShock 1. The only one that I played was BioShock Infinite.
But I think you didn't like it.
No, but BioShock Infinite is, I didn't care for it, but I kind of feel like I need to go back and play BioShock 1.
Mm-hmm.
It's called BioShock, not BioShock 1. I don't know why I like BioShock 1. But BioShock just seems like a very influential game that I never played. And it's a different vibe than BioShock Infinite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's BioShock Infinite is like very bright. A lot of colors.
Sure.
It's got, I don't know. It didn't click with me, but I really feel like I should go back and play BioShock. Like, isn't that one of your favorite games?
Dude, okay. Here's the thing.
Yes. Andrew, just say yes.
It is.
When I was a child, I spoke like a child. But when I was an adult, I put child. All I'm saying is BioShock was like one of my first video games that I was really into in like 2007 and 2008. But I also didn't know shit about video games at the time. I didn't know what was out there. I just thought that game looks really cool. That game is a really cool idea, and it looks really cool. And I was into it. Looking back on it now, though, you might not be into it because I know you're a gameplay guy, and like the gameplay is not incredibly interesting. I would say what is interesting, and so I was watching the Bioshock Iceberg on YouTube, and the way that those games connect is absolutely incredible. But I will say, if you're willing to overlook somewhat uninteresting gameplay and be like, and think, man, this is an interesting and cool looking world, and this is a really cool story, then I think it's worth playing. But the gameplay is not super. It's nothing. The gameplay isn't anything revolutionary.
Is it the same as Bioshock Infinite?
No, it's a little.
Like, if you die at a boss, do you die or do you like revive right where you, where you ended?
You go to a Vita chamber. I'm sorry, Thomas. I don't like that feature.
I didn't want to say it.
There's a Vita chamber?
You respawn to the Vita chamber. Maybe, dude, put it on very hard. Maybe you'll like it if you put it on very hard.
Maybe I'll do that.
Dude, put it on hard. I think you'll.
Is it balanced?
If you didn't like Infinite, jump into Bioshock 1. I think.
The ambiance
of Bioshock is so good.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to do it.
So my Miss the Boat game is like, I have had Shadow of Mordor in my...
Here we go. Buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy one.
I have had Shadow of Mordor... Like installed, sitting there for literally like 8 years.
Oh, dude.
And I was finally, guys, here's my new thing that I do with games is I'm not willing to just go in and like try it. I'm like, I have to make myself excited about this game.
And
if you try a new game and you tell yourself, I'm going to get excited about this game, I think that you can talk yourself into some games you wouldn't normally play. But dude, Shadow of Mordor?
Oh, come
dude,
on.
How have people not stolen this system?
Because it's patented
exactly.
by Warner Brothers.
Thomas. But seriously, why aren't other games using
it's
this?
It's so good. It's so good.
Honestly, the Nemesis system in Shadow of War is so innovative and so fun. Like, it's so fun where you're just like, well, maybe
I'm gonna manipulate
dude,
all of you. Yes, yeah.
Maybe this guy has, because in Shadow, and I don't mean to hijack, but like, it's one of my favorite franchises of all time.
Oh yeah,
when in Shadow of War, when they introduced like the siege concept of like it's multiplayer, but not really. Really, you just create your own base, and then other people attack it when you're not there.
Yeah,
they you're not like fighting another.
It's not pure PvP.
Yeah, PvP.
Yeah, yeah.
But the amount of times you're like, okay, if I go and get this guy, maybe he has the one trait I need to protect me from fire arrows.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, wait, like I could play that game forever.
Wait, hang on. So people can attack your base
while you're away? I think Philip is talking about the sequel. Shadow of War.
Shadow of War.
Yeah, but yeah, they can.
People can attack your base while you're away?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but that, you're not there to defend it.
That's how it works.
Okay.
It's still PvE, but they're attacking the setup that you built yourself.
That you built.
And they're also they're attacking the orc general that you have made yourself to defend to defend that space.
You know what?
So if you can take an orc like a lowly level plebe and raise him through the ranks, by the time he gets up there, he's absolutely dominating.
Yeah.
Because they get you, and as you've seen, as they rise through the ranks in the orc world, they get traits added to them. So if you start with some, it's better to start with someone all the way at the bottom. Because if you start with someone all the way at the bottom, you get upgrade after upgrade after upgrade as you work them up, and they learn new traits
as they upgrade. Like, oh, guess what? They're you know, can't be hit by headshots. Oh, they can't. They're immune to poison.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had an orc one time. I'm sorry to get off on this tangent, but this system is so good. I fought an orc to a general to a standstill one time, and he retreated, and I wasn't able to like chase him and finish him off. He had like a bunch of guys come in and cover him. And then I fought him later, and I had used the same move. I had like spammed the same move in my first fight with him.
And when I fought him
in the second fight, there was actually a line of dialogue
where he's like that won't work.
You've tried that on me before, and now it doesn't. And I was like, oh my god, like
what
it
do
was
I do?
Crazy,
dude. I will never forget my first experience playing that game. Was like in Watch Out for Fireballs was talking about this, how it's kind of like wrestling. It's kind of like professional wrestling. Because you're like, there's this dude in your face, and he's like,
there's like the smack talk. Yeah.
And so basically, they were like, it was like, hey, you have to take down this boss. And of course, every boss has a wrinkle. It's like, you can't, you have to hit him with the fire furnace. You can't hit him directly. Yeah. And I remember fucking other bosses kept always showing up in the fight.
Yeah, dude.
I was like, I just want a straight fight with this dude, and other people kept showing up. And dude, let me tell you how mad I was getting. Because every time, this is what's so great about the game, every time he beats you, he goes up a level.
Yes.
He is like another player in the sense that he is getting stronger after every time. And dude, the rage that creates, knowing that your enemy is getting stronger every time you're beating him is like...
But if you can, whatever you do, if you can like mind control another orc to become his rival, that's a whole nother angle now.
And the system is
so deep.
Yeah.
That was even before I could mind control.
I will say this. I don't know if I'm assuming you've gone down this road because you're a Mordor fan. But so in the first one, they offer DLC, and one of them's called like it's Ithriel, but it's her thing, and it's these like time challenges, where it's like go and take over all five war chiefs all of their men without like doing any mind control.
Yeah,
they give you these things like you can't mind control anyone, and you have to do it in like 22 minutes.
Oh my god!
And you have to like you legitimately like. It's like when those nerds online, they show you a Rubik's Cube and they look at the Rubik's Cube for 10 seconds before they solve it.
Yeah.
You have to literally break out a piece of paper and map out like,
I'm here.
Okay, well, this
here,
war
here,
chief
here,
is going to be here then. Yep. It's going to be, you feel like you're a beautiful mind and you're like attaching yarn to pictures of Soviet spies.
Yeah. I've always been a Tolkien head. And when you look at like the added content to his world, these two video games are two of the best. I mean, bar none. When you talk about animated stuff, books, video games, these two games, and there's been way other Lord of the Rings games before these games, but
you know, man,
these. Sorry, guys, I can tell Thomas's eyes are glazing.
Yeah. Sorry, Thomas.
No, guys,
and Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson was hired as a
creative consultant.
Yeah. Consultant on both games.
Dude, the sheer number of West Londoners that they have, the entire population, right? Dude, seriously, the voice actors in Shadow of Mordor.
Thomas, have you played it?
No,
dude, you would not
it out,
like
man.
It.
You gotta check
based
it out.
Based off what you're describing. No, I'm asking.
No, I think he would love it.
Probably,
love it.
Yeah. Let
you
me
can
add,
buy it. You can buy
you
it on PlayStation
it's
for
a,
12
it's,
cents.
It's an open world game, right?
Yeah.
It's
open
does
world.
It,
open
does
world.
It?
Yes.
Does it have like a lot of like busy work, like bandit camps?
If you want to do busy work, it's there.
I hate busy work.
Dude, it is pure. It's a strategy game. I like to call it a strategy game that you're playing down inside of.
God, I'm gonna play it again.
Dude, it's so good.
I know, dang it, we shouldn't have talked about it. I'm gonna go platinum it again. Dang it.
Okay,
I think I've got it on like PlayStation or something.
Dude, it's literally like $2 right now. It's
free.
Yeah,
they'll give it to you. For
they'll
free.
Pay you to play it.
Okay, guys, so let's talk about open worlds. Let me just do.
No, that's good. We want that.
Yeah. Keep it. That's good for the pod.
Let's do a little intro here. So let me just define what an open world game is for everybody. Stole this from the wiki page. An open world game is a game designed with non-linear open areas with many ways to reach an objective. An open world facilitates greater exploration than a series of small levels or a level with more linear challenges. A major design challenge is to balance the freedom of an open world with the structure of a dramatic storyline. Since players may perform actions that the game designer did not expect, the game's writers must find creative ways to impose a storyline on the player without interfering with their freedom. Gameplay designer Manveer Hire, who worked on the Mass Effect game, said there are difficulties in the design of an open world game since it is difficult to predict how players will approach solving gameplay challenges offered by a design. Some of the most influential open-world games are The Legend of Zelda, Grand Theft Auto, Assassin's Creed 2, Skyrim, and Fallout. So the first question I want to ask y'all is, tell us about a very specific moment you had playing an open-world game that you feel was the best open-world experience you have ever had.
I don't want to go first.
Well, now you have to.
Okay. Wow. The best experience playing an open world.
Like
game.
When all the systems, it was just working.
Yeah.
It just clicked.
Yeah. So I was gonna talk about this in our last like hot take episode, but I'll tell you now, there's a lot of people now that Elden Ring is out, a lot of people are comparing Elden Ring to a lot of other AAA open world games that are like very busy. Like mm-hmm. there's a lot on mm-hmm. the map and there's a lot of blah, blah, blah. Probably for about the past 5 or 6 years, that has been fully customizable for most of these other studios like Ubisoft and Horizon and game like things like that. I don't know if gamers just don't know that or just haven't decided to use it, or maybe gamers are so lazy that they're just taking the writ like default mode when they enter an open world game. But the truth is, for most open world games, all of these things have been fully customizable. One of the things that Valhalla specifically has done really, really well is encourage exploration without any of those icons. And I would almost compare it a little bit to Elden Ring, but I was playing Valhalla shortly after it came out. I fast traveled to an area. I was at a high point. I jumped down. I landed. And when I came up out and I scanned the horizon, like I saw areas that were interesting to me mm-hmm. without any icons or anything or anything telling me. Like I saw a village with big billows of smoke coming up from the village. Mm-hmm. I saw like an indentation in the coast that looked like it was probably a cave. I saw all of these things without icons.
Hang on. Truly the map doesn't. Truly, they didn't take icons away, or did you just turn them off?
You can turn them off.
Yeah.
You choose to turn them off.
Yeah.
There's explorer mode, which is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's what I was playing. And I think that they did a really good job at creating, like, here's a place you should probably go to mm-hmm. just from the environmental clues. And just the general experience of finding what I needed to find in that way. And also, I have loved, this has been the past, like, 4 Assassin's Creed games. I've loved being able to, like utilize a bird or utilize something overhead. I know that the Division, I don't know if that's purely open world, the Division has like drones and stuff, but, I've loved to utilize stuff like that to like, scan ahead. But Valhalla in particular for me is a really memorable experience of like utilizing just the clues that I saw from the world as like a place that I wanted to go explore.
Let me ask you this about that. Did you play the entire game that way?
No.
I
toggled on and off. Yeah.
Be curious, like, if you played the game that way, how much you would have done.
Yeah, me too. Oh, I don't know, because
I should have done that playing.
Is that
Valhalla.
How Zelda was?
Zelda is pretty much like that. Like just kind of like run and you're like, oh, that looks interesting.
Zelda does have the map. Zelda does have, once you unlock the tower and it opens up the site there, it tells you where to go.
Yeah.
For a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There are side missions, yes, where you have to go and talk to a guy that you never would have known unless you talked to him.
I would be curious, like, what the play experience would be like, too, because I haven't played the new Assassin's Creed, so I don't know, like, what it's like.
You should.
great. Maybe
it's my favorite Assassin's Creed since 4.
But I'd be curious if the major... do the major landmarks, like, kind of, like, draw your eye, or does like everything?
No, I mean, well, obviously major landmarks are like larger cities, and so you see those from far away anyway, But even minor stuff is like, if there's something that looks like you should go over there, there's almost always a reason. But you also have to remember, I mean, Valhalla has things like rebel camps everywhere and like little areas of loot. They have like traps, they have like tombs, they have caves. And all of those things can be seen from like a faraway perspective. So it's not just the major points. I mean, the major story beats and the major, like the main storyline, all of those things typically happen in like the larger cities.
Yeah.
But when you're out on the countryside, like you see plenty of reason to go explore places.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the point at which you were like, so like the game can't truly be played with the icons turned off, because at some point you're saying, well, I want to make sure that I hit everything. And that's when you turn the icons on.
I mean,
on.
If you're a completionist, I mean, yeah. If you're a completionist and you're doing explorer mode, it's just going to take a really long time. Like, it's not impossible, yeah. Yeah. But like, yeah. it probably could be done. I had, Valhalla is, we could talk about trophies in Valhalla. I had like two glitched.
Did you? You haven't 100%ed it?
So they fixed a patch about like 6 months ago, and I finally did.
Yeah.
But there were two things you could not complete because it was so
very frustrating.
You go rage. Back to Asgard, there were like, it's like you can't beat this mission because it's glitched.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
Anyway, yeah.
Next question is, well, y'all kind
of. Did everyone answer that question? Did you?
Did you?
I will, but you go ahead.
You go first, please.
Yeah. Well, can you say the question again?
What is the best? What is the best? Be very specific. What is the best specific moment?
I remember. Okay, so I think the greatest franchise of games ever made. Well, I like Red Dead to me is like both those games and the DLC.
Oh wow! Okay.
Undead Nightmare were just perfect. Like I loved every minute of both games. Yeah. When Red Dead 2 came out, I was like, this is the like pinnacle of video games.
Video games.
And I remember before on your last mission, if you finish the good mission, if you're the good guy, if you're the good Arthur, there's a minute where he is riding his horse in the sunset. Like I have screenshots of it on my phone that he is riding the horse and he's seeing visions of like the elk like off in the distance. And there's a beautiful sunset in the background. And I remember being like, this is the greatest game I think I've ever played. Like, ever. And I'm being serious. Like,
that's in the ride-up to the end of the game.
It's the last mission.
I remember
and
that.
Yeah, scene, yeah, and you're riding it, and you follow him along.
If you're good Arthur, right?
If you're good Arthur.
On that last
And I remember doing
choice.
That and being like, man, everything I've done in this game, like going to Des Moines and going to like all these different areas has been just so fun. Like it has genuinely been the funnest time I've had.
Isn't it
dumbest little side missions? Like the dumbest little things have been enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
everything about this game is beautiful. The mountains and the areas by Emerald Ranch and like, all these areas are gorgeous and it's fun. And the dumb little NPC, just random run-ins that you're like, some dude wrote that we should put this in the game. And everyone at a table was like, really? Yeah, let's put that in the game. And in the crazy part to me, and I know this is one of your questions, so I don't want to bury the lead, but the amount of times you had a run-in with something random in that game, that
100%.
That game was sold by, let's say 15 million people bought it, that like 50,000 people experienced that moment.
Yeah,
that bought that game to me is like, that's so cool.
They put in tons of work and effort, and like a lot of people,
1% of people will never know it exists.
I rode by I was playing this game one time. I don't know if this happened to you. I rode by like a small KKK meeting. It was like five or six guys, and they were hoisting.
Oh yeah,
they were hoisting up a flaming cross, and so I like pulled off to the side. I got off my horse, and I'm like, I'm gonna go shoot these guys, and I start running through the field. Well, the dudes drop the cross. The guy drops the cross on the other guy and kills him.
Yeah.
And before I even get there, they're just like,
they all set themselves on fire.
They all set themselves on fire.
Yeah. Those robes, man, they're flammable. Like,
very flammable. Or so I've heard.
And it was like, as a gamer, it was such a good moment because you're running in like, oh, this is gonna be a like I need to go kill these guys. And so I jump off my horse, and so I'm like And in your mind, you're like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to shoot this guy with a shotgun. Then I'm going to get behind this cover. And so I'm making this plan in my head. And before I got there, they just were.
Didn't even need it.
They just didn't need it. They all caught themselves on fire. And it made me laugh so hard.
Philip, let me ask a controversial question.
Oh, boy.
In that moment of riding and the nostalgia, did you want to hold B to skip?
I tried.
Oh, you did?
All I'm saying is that was a narrative moment in the game. And you
know, I agree.
You didn't want to skip it. So,
no, and I didn't want to skip it. So I enjoyed that moment because of everything Arthur had been through and all that stuff. So.
And then the game was telling you a story.
Yeah.
Debatable.
Boom. There it is.
No story.
Thomas.
All right. I'm going to pick. It's hard for me to nail down my like favorite open world. Mainly because historically, I'm not a huge fan of open world games.
Why?
So I've discovered I like open world games. I don't like open world games that give me a lot of information and like tell me what to do.
Okay. Yeah.
So I like games that like, don't have markers or waypoints and just let me like do my thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick Metro Exodus.
That's a good one.
I would classify it as an open world game. It's technically like four mini open world games in one because every map is a stage, but each map takes like 5 hours, 5 to 10 hours to do it all, and you can do it in like any order, but. Metro Exodus is cool because it doesn't really have a HUD. It gives you all of your information on like the character's arm. So there's like a little compass that points to where you need to go. There's ammunition that you can like see leave the gun. So you kind of like know how much you have left. Your guns get dirty. So they jam if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And you have to clean them. The map isn't like a map where you push a button and it like goes to a menu. It's like
truly a paper map.
It's like a cloth map that your character pulls out and when a guy tells him like you need to go to the factory.
There's a factory over there.
The guy like takes out a pen and like marks it.
Yeah,
that's
and
cool.
If you want to set a waypoint, you can, but the waypoint is like one of those little like red map things that you've probably like a general use.
Yep.
And your compass points to that, but there's no like indication on screen that like that's where you need to go.
It's not all the way hand-holding.
Yeah, and everything in that game is like it tells you and gives you direction, but it does it in such a way that like requires you to pay attention to it that it just like fully brings you into the world, and I just think it's
cool.
Just an incredible design because so much because I do think going back to the Assassin's Creed like marker on the map thing, when you're designing a space and you start with like we're gonna have an icon on the map that tells a person where to go, that enables you as a designer to like not make your areas like 100% navigationable. Like as a rule, because you're like, well, you know, if they ever like get stuck, they just like go to this point. So I think it's cool when a designer like boxes himself in a corner, and they like create a space that makes sense to me. I just think it's a very good design choice.
Okay, I think this is something we need to hash out that should be interesting. Thomas, you have said many times you don't like icons on a map. You like when situations feel organic. Like you're roaming an open world and
dude,
something.
Dude, moment
organic.
To moment thoughtfulness,
dude,
baby.
Just moment to moment thoughtfulness.
Moment to moment
you like moments that feel organic on the map as to icons on the map. Philip, do you agree with that or
no? Well, here's my question and counterpoint would be: how am I supposed to know what to even do?
Ooh,
how do I know what to do? And I'm playing a game. Like I want to do something. Like and maybe this is my like I don't want to. Again, get
this
too deep.
This is just your
in
lizard brain, Philip.
But like, no, like Elden Ring.
Okay,
this is my issue with Elden Ring. From every now, I'll say this: I've had two really good buddies play it and give me feedback. I've watched a bunch of YouTube stuff on it because I'm like, do I want to spend $60 on this game?
And they told you not to play it?
Both of them said, don't buy it.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So
they're both like, they're like me. Breath of the Wild's in their top five for sure. They love Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
They said, don't buy it because they're like, both of them said, I'm 30 hours in and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And like, I'm really bored playing the game. And that, that's their feedback on the game. And to me, it's like, what a waste of a game. Like,
you wasted
all this time. Like, at least tell people, go here,
I'm
maybe
much further, and I'm not bored at all. So there's different experiences
For sure.
Now, what I will say, what Elden Ring does is you start the game, and a guy says, see that castle? Go there. So you always know that there's, like, a castle that you need to go to. And that's, like, how the game starts. And every checkpoint you get to will, like, point to the next area that you need to go.
Got it.
So there's, like, light guidance, but it never, like, explicitly tells you. And then anything that you see when you go there, it's going to be, like, a good time. Like, you're going to have a good time.
You're going to have a good time.
When you get to anything.
Okay, so, and I apologize. We went off on, like,
question, Daniel.
What you said earlier about, I don't like games that have icons and tell you where to go. Andrew said, do I agree? I said, no, because I don't know what to do. Like, what do you do in games that aren't like, here's the next thing to do? Like, how do you view games like that?
So most of the games, they generally have like an icon of sorts. Like in Metro Exodus, like there's an icon on your map with like a big X. It's like, this is where you go. But it's not on the like the screen. Like there's not a compass.
There's not like a visual waypoint.
Yeah, yeah. And that I don't like because it's like an artificial thing that's not in the game world that kind of like takes me out of it.
Yeah.
And yet, imagine, so you like the mystery and the randomness of Red Dead, but Red Dead would be meaningless without a main story.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so you agree that we still need like a main story to point us through. In addition to randomness.
Yeah, yeah. I would, of course, say like even Elden Ring has like a goal that you're doing.
A main story.
And like the game has ways of pointing you to general thing. So I don't, like, for instance, I don't play like online games or MMO games because like they don't have an end. And I don't want to get involved in that. Because I like having something that like has an endpoint.
You need a pretty bow.
Yeah, like
I need a bow.
Like,
well,
I just know that if it doesn't have an end and I really love what I'm playing, that I'm not gonna stop.
Oh boy.
And like,
oh wait, you don't want to play MMOs because you think you'll like them too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh boy, dude, we need to play an MMO, Thomas.
Which is fine. But I just does that answer your
no
question?
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, yeah.
You're gonna,
No. That, yeah, just continue.
So Philip, so I'm trying to figure out some common ground here. So, Philip, you like icons on a map because you like the feeling of completion and, like, I need the game to tell me what to do. Thomas, you prefer mystery because you like not, you don't want icons on a map because it's like, make it feel organic, make it feel like real life.
So, I like mystery because I like the sense of discovery and, like, finding something out on my own. And I like to see what a game developer has to, like, make the process of discovery interesting to me.
Okay. I see what you're saying. But let me just posit this.
And I'm just saying what I think.
Yeah. So the true open world video game developed slightly ahead of the internet. And I do think that Elden Ring and all FromSoft games benefit greatly from the internet.
Yeah,
I think that there's even an intentionality about, we want you to connect with the community to try and figure this next thing out.
Yeah, totally.
So we want you to utilize the, but when open world games first came onto the scene, they did have to provide a little of that guidance because they developed just a little bit ahead, maybe a year or two ahead of like the full internet and gaming communities. What we have now with a lot of video games that come out, like we have like a community manager. Like their whole job is to work on the relationship of like gelling all these players together and getting all these players to like be common and be together and talk to each other and not be toxic. And so I do think that when you come to minimalizing that information, a lot of studios are able to minimalize that information and it still is fun because of the wider community. And so they're kind of, I don't want to say taking advantage of, but they're kind of like utilizing the community to like fill in a lot of the gaps that they leave. And yeah. I think that open world games started out without the internet. And so they needed to plug the guidance in there at the beginning.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And that tangent was long, but
yeah. Dark Souls needs the internet.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it does.
Well, what if the other thing is like, what if you knew nothing about and you didn't have the online community to assist you in this?
Yeah.
You just spent hours in Elden Ring or just like wandering around like what do I do? Like what other things
so
are there to do?
So I would push
I
back.
I would be super pissed.
I would
that
push
I like
back
wasted
against
2 hours.
I would push back against that a good bit just because like I've played the majority of my playthrough without like consulting the internet and I'm like over 100 hours.
You also know the you like Souls.
You get
games,
the Dark
so you
Souls
know the
ethos.
Things, you know?
Well, yeah. But that doesn't take away the fact that like I haven't used the internet. Like I and I'm not using that as like a badge of pride.
If you've
like,
used
I don't
a
care.
Single if you've used a single hint that was written on the ground in Elden Ring, then you've used the internet.
Well, when you guys
do you know what
use
I'm saying?
The internet, I'm picturing like Googling
like going
how,
on
how
yeah.
do I
like the Dark Souls Reddit.
No, I get it. Like you haven't like yeah, and that's fine. Like you haven't gone on the Reddit, but if you've utilized any hint that a player has left, like the internet has helped you with part of Elden Ring.
Yeah, but that's like a design. That's like a design within the game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So well, I think that is a different sum. And I'm not saying but I don't think that the From Software, Dark Souls, Elden Ring games, I don't think that you need the internet to figure out how to finish the games. I don't think that.
Maybe for you. Yeah.
Well, no. I would say for most people,
the average I think y'all hit this perfectly on your last podcast, and I was listening to it, and I was like, you know what? They're totally right about
you,
this.
Thank you, Philip. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Wow.
Y'all, there are a lot of people that downloaded this game and bought this game that don't understand From Software and what these games are about and what they are. And they downloaded it thinking they were downloading Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah.
Which I wish I was. No, they downloaded it thinking they're going to get like a really wild, like sword fighting crazy. And it's like, that's not what From Software does.
Yeah.
Did they make this game, from what I can tell, a little bit more palatable to the average person? Definitely. They totally did. But
this game, by their standards, it's like out of control how palatable.
It's like, it's Mario Party.
They like slit your throat from the first second. This takes like a long time before
I bet the Dark Souls Reddit is like so mad.
Calls it the easiest From Software. Like
the guy who can beat Dark Souls on his Rock Band drum did it in 8 minutes.
he's
embarrassed.
Yeah.
But I think they fell into that trap where the guys I know that downloaded it, that have played it, have never downloaded a From Software game. And they just don't understand this is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, this is these games. Like, the combat is hard. You're going to die 87,500 times.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I have a problem with its high rating. Like, reviews are bullshit. I don't put any stock in reviews. But the reason I think it should not be as high on Metacritic as it is because this is a FromSoft game and it is not for everybody. And I keep seeing people post in the Facebook groups and say, this is so hard. Why is this so hard? And it's like, it's not for everybody. It is for the minority of the population that likes these games. You know?
I mean, I could see
it's a good FromSoft game. It's probably the best from the best FromSoft game.
Have you beaten it?
No, I have not.
What do you give it out of 10?
Thomas gives it 12.
No, I'd give it pretty high. I mean, at least
is it if you could only play one From Software game for the rest of your life, would this be it?
Oh yeah, totally.
Okay.
I mean, it's their best game.
Yeah.
Okay.
That they've made.
Would you say the fact that they made it easier than the other games like Bloodborne and
Would you say
that was a positive move?
Yeah, 100%. I also don't think it's easier. I think it gives you more options for dealing with problems.
Okay.
That's true.
Yeah, because it's more...
Elden Ring?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm deep into it.
It's okay. More user-friendly than the other games. Mm-hmm. And you're... Because of the open world, like, you're never, like, up against a wall. Like, there's literally a million things to go do.
Yeah.
I'm well over, like, 100 hours... And I'm just now to the point where it's like, I have two options that I can take. So, and this is like the first wall that I've gotten to.
Yeah.
Thomas doesn't want it to be over.
I don't want it to be over.
So, like, would I like it?
Huh?
Would I like it?
I don't think you would like it.
I love Valhalla.
I'll say the difference that Thomas is getting to. So in like Bloodborne or Dark Souls 3, there's a point where it's like, nothing happens until you beat this boss. Like, nothing else is going to happen until you beat this boss. In Elden Ring, that's a very difficult point to get to, because in Elden Ring, being an open world game, eventually, yes, there is a boss that you have to beat. Like, obviously that's there. But, like, getting to that point is exhaustive. And so there's a lot of other stuff to do, but I mean, you wouldn't worry about skipping story. You wouldn't worry about skipping cutscenes, because the longest cutscene is like 30 seconds, and you might have a few cutscenes of like 30 seconds. There's multiple, but like after that, it's just sort of, you know. And there is some dialogue with some NPCs.
And the cutscenes are bad. They're always like, the Knights of Gordor.
Yeah, you would be annoyed by every NPC. I don't know why. Like, everyone just talks very softly, and it annoys me.
I'm already annoyed.
Like,
I think you'll like it because it's pure gameplay. It's pure
and
game.
One thing that I would say too is, like, to his point of there not being a wall and all that. The first boss, the game tells you like, hey, there's a dude there. Go. I played for like 40 hours, and I got to the guy. I didn't even go to the guy until that point.
Yeah, wait.
You like get past it, there's like another part of the game that like opens up to you, but there's like another way to get there. You can access like literally the entire map without fighting like the first main boss, and you'll have, you know, a good time.
Yeah. Okay, turn this podcast into get Phillip to download.
Yeah,
Elden Ring.
But if you don't want to play it, you don't have.
And if you can ride your horse through the, or not your mount, if you can ride your mount through these areas and get them to chase you, they'll chase each other. They'll chase you into each other and start fighting each other.
Yeah.
And I created one time in Elden Ring like a massive war and ended up with thousands of runes.
Yeah.
And I didn't do any combat at all. And that was pretty cool. I mean, I don't know if that's an emergent system.
Oh,
but
that's
there
definitely,
is,
yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some enemies in Elden Ring that are also unfriendly with each other. And so you can manipulate that and use that system to your advantage, which did make me laugh.
Anybody else have anything?
Yeah, I have two, and they're shockingly both from Red Dead.
Ayo!
It's like my two favorite, like, moments you're like, wait, what? And it's because you were just riding your horse around.
Yeah.
So there's one, it's a random little house just east of like Emerald Ranch, and you ride past it, you hear a guy and he's like, hey, come over here, partner, come over here. And you're like, okay. Yeah. I mean, I come when I'm called, I got manners. So you go by and he's like, hey, come in, me and my wife want to have someone over for dinner. So you go in, long story short, he poisons your food, or I think you drink something, you pass out, and then they essentially rape you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you wake up the next morning and you're like, that was weird.
Yeah.
You have that like You know, in video games, when you drink too much and you have that dizzy hazy fog,
yeah,
and you wake up and you're just like, "Oh, that was weird."
Or in real life, when I drink in real life, that happens too.
And you can choose to like, you can go back again and then like kill them if you want to.
Yeah.
But my favorite.
Oh, good. You can murder them if you
can go back and kill them. Yeah. So my favorite, just completely random, is a dude was complaining. It was in Saint Denis. A dude was complaining that his arm really hurt because he had fallen off his horse. And you're like, "Yeah." He's like, "Can you take me to a doctor?" You're like, "Yeah, partner, hop on." So he hops on. And you take him to the doctor, and it funny enough, it turns out to be the doctor who, spoilers, ends up telling Arthur he has
tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis. So you take him to the doctor, and you let him in. He's like, "Thanks a lot, partner." And then it tells you you've got like $15
some honor,
and you get honor. And then I'm kind of sitting there, and I hear the doctor's conversation with the guy, and he's like, "Oh man, this is really bad. You know what? We're gonna have to amputate your arm." And then I'm like, "Well, I gotta see this." So I walk into the building, walk into the doctor's office, and you see this dude get his arm amputated. And then the doctor, best part is he like looks at it and just throws it into the trash while the other guy's screaming.
This is like a completely random thing
you would have maybe encountered. And again, what we talked about earlier. Like 10,000 people that downloaded that game
saw that and experienced that. I love that junk.
So
that's like my two favorite random encounters. There's plenty in Valhalla, but those are my two favorite.
Do you have anything, Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say something like from Breath of the Wild about using the tools that you have, like the what's the one where you can like freeze an object and then build momentum on it?
Oh, yeah.
Things like that where you can use that to interact with like different parts of the world. Like I've never done this, so it's not something that I've experienced in the game, but I've watched people do it, like how they would like freeze a boulder and then put a bunch of like energy in it and then use the boulder to like launch themselves to the other side of the map. Like things like that are really, creative on the player's part.
That's a good, do y'all, and this one will be short, but do y'all ever find in these open world games that you're pursuing goals that like the game doesn't necessarily want you to do at all? Like, do y'all ever do that where it's like, the game doesn't want me to pursue this? Obviously, if it's an icon on the map and there's a check mark, the game wants me to do that. But do y'all ever find that you're doing things that the game like doesn't give a shit whether you do or not?
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of open world games is to like do whatever you want. And when you mean like the game doesn't want you to do this, like if it means being outside of the main mission, I do that all the time on open world games. But I mean, when you say the game doesn't want you to do that, it doesn't reward you necessarily all the time. And there's also, I mean, and there's plenty of open world instances of like exploration that isn't rewarded. So like exploration where, and I've done it in Elden Ring and Assassin's Creed games, but like I'm just so sure that there's something in this area and I go check it out and it's like just
nothing.
Grass.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like I've done that like so many times. So, the game probably didn't necessarily want me to go explore, but I did.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't rewarded. And that's tough because like, what do you do as a developer? Do you put little knickknacks like literally everywhere, or do you try and find a balance of like, yeah, if you explore this area, that's worth it, and if you explore this area over here, it's not worth it. You know what I mean? And it's tough to like find that balance. And at some point, I think the point I'm getting to is like, some gamers are going to be pissed. Like an open world
game. When you're rewarded with nothing, it sucks.
Yeah, absolutely nothing. Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. And there's never going to be, you're never going to find the line that all gamers agree on because we don't agree on anything ever.
Yeah.
You're never going to find the space where like, yeah, that's the right amount of exploration. There's always going to be some people who are like you did a bad job by not rewarding me. And then there's going to be some people who like miss a bunch of hidden stuff. So, so it's tough, man. It's tough to find that medium of like this is where most gamers are, you know.
Okay, final question. is it, would it be possible, and this is, would it be, so we talked about like open world games always have like, there's like a main quest that they're trying to get you to do, and everybody knows you hit pause on the main quest and you do all the other fun stuff, and then maybe you come back to the main quest. Is it possible to make a game in which there is no main quest and there is no side quest? There's just things that happen. And would that be, have you ever played a game like that, and would that even work as a game?
Like The Sims?
Yeah,
no, but I mean, The Sims
essentially, but it would be like The Sims, maybe. And I'm thinking of like a fighting game, so like a Sims game, but you just like pillaged, and
you
that
just
was
go like just
yeah,
people,
like you just
yeah.
It was like you just pillaged and took over, and that
yeah,
was,
right.
It was essentially ancient like Roman Italy,
yeah,
like that
yeah.
was it. Right. That was,
or I guess it could work like in Valhalla. They just put a bunch of villages to take over, and you start taking them over. And once you take over enough, it's like, I don't know. I'm just imagining how a story would even arise from the players randomly doing things.
Well,
know?
A story not arising is right.
Well, I mean, in a game like that, I don't know if you necessarily need a story.
Yeah.
I mean, not to harp on Elden Ring again, but Elden Ring is kind of similar because like the Dark Souls games are like famous for having like a story in the world, but like if you want to learn it, you can, and if you don't, like it's not going to impact your enjoyment of the game.
Yeah.
So like there's not a lot of like narrative involvement that the game puts on you.
Yeah.
So you do just kind of like run around and do stuff and have fun and get little rewards here and there.
But it still has a main quest.
Yeah, but the main quest is like become the Elden Lord. Like that's what the main quest
is. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And there's like a lot of like stuff that's involved in that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you only knew that, you'd be like, oh, this is fine. But yeah. I think the challenge is like, is the gameplay rewarding enough to like mm-hmm. carry you in a mm-hmm. game like that? Mm. And I don't know.
Dude, it's sorry.
I don't know if you're talking about like single or multiplayer, but isn't like Grand Theft Auto Online like that?
Then when you talk about multiplayer, that's hard to say.
I mean, in Grand Theft Auto Online is its own cesspool of
microtransactions,
and it's
I've
a
never
very
played it.
Small. I mean, it's super fun. It's really fun, but you grind for like 4 hours, and you're like, oh, I can't even afford a car.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's why they sell
shark cards,
dude.
Shark cards.
It's called a shark card.
Shark card.
You ever heard of it,
dude? It sucks so bad when the gameplay is making me want to play the game because the gameplay is so good, and then it puts you back into some linear, shitty, follow somebody story quest, which Shadow of Mordor does. Because it's like the gameplay is so good, and then it's like, hey, do this really boring quest where you follow a guy around. And like I know it's like a 6-year-old game, but it pissed me off.
Following people are my least favorite. My favorite thing is when you follow a person and when you press the run button, that person runs at,
absolutely.
At the exact same
absolutely.
Pace. Yeah, no games do that. There was this mission in Ghost of Tsushima where I had to follow a person. And when I went faster, it was always like, you failed because you got out of range. And I'm just like...
Really?
Freaking swear! This is ridiculous,
dude. I love it.
There's like three of those missions in 60 hours of gameplay.
Well, it stood out to me,
dude. And I love it when they're running in front of you and you start running and they start running too. It's like they have eyes in the back of their head.
Yeah.
Any other open world comments before we go to John?
No, I can't wait to hear what this guy
any other,
has up.
No,
other
but I actually have some. I have a couple random questions for the group.
Yeah.
That are completely unprepared.
Yeah.
So like. Can y'all give me maybe an open world game that no one or a lot of people haven't played that you're like, you got to check this game out? And I'm asking this because I have
Grand Theft Auto.
That's a good one.
You should play Elix.
Elix.
It was made by 20 people. It's like a B game. I'm telling you, the game is it's It doesn't suck, but it's not a good game. It's not polished, but it's really interesting.
Okay.
Did you play?
Don't play it. You're gonna despise.
Did you play Greedfall?
No.
Greedfall.
Okay. Greedfall. I almost downloaded it like a week ago.
Okay.
And I was like, it's not for me.
Okay.
But I'm happy to have my mind changed.
So back when we used to do the podcast in a way where we had like we picked a game that we all would play.
Yeah.
I picked Greedfall 1 month, and I really really liked it. It's like a solid like double A open world game.
Is it the game where you show up at like a world and there's some like native people there?
Yeah.
That are,
yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a so it's kind of like the Age of Exploration. So think of like, you know, the Renaissance and like, you know, the Spanish Inquisition and stuff
okay.
like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyway, it's not Earth. It's a made up world. But they like a new continent is discovered, and so explorers are like going to that continent to like stake their claim and make their fortune. And there's like,
yeah, I think you might like it.
There's magic happening on that continent. You can have swords, but it is also like a world that has like early firearms, so you can have fires.
Oh,
you can have like
cool.
you can have muzzle loading pistols and stuff like that too. I really liked it. And it was very cool. You can see that it's not, you know, it's not Earth, but you can see all the influences of like, oh, these guys are basically Spain, and like these guys over here
kind of
are
hinting
basically,
at,
yeah. You can kind of get that vibe from it, but I liked Greedfall a lot.
They're like, well, they're speaking Spanish,
yeah. So I feel
like this might be Spain.
Anything else,
Thomas? What about you? Any open world games we should try
that you should try?
Well, a game called Elden Ring.
I would try Elden Ring. No, I really would.
I'm sure I might. And then after like 10 hours,
dude,
I'll be
Elix,
like,
Elix legitimately is really interesting. It's not a polished game, and it feels very clunky. But the systems it has is a lot of fun. It's like a jet, but there's a jetpack, dude.
Okay, I'll
Any
check
game
it out.
That has the balls to do a jetpack.
The only other two series, I will say, as someone who is like. Outside of Call of Duty Warzone, which is what I play with my buddies as like our multiplayer game,
yeah.
that is obsessed with open world.
Yeah.
The Mafia franchise, Mafia 3, based in New Orleans, is super fun. And a random game that I downloaded that I was like, there's no way this game is going to be fun, and then I ended up like 100%ing it, is Mad Max.
Oh, it's so good.
Mad Max
I've heard is
super
really good.
Fun. And it's so dumb and stupid. But it's the combat is really, really fun.
Yeah.
The combat is super fun, and the exploration around the world is super fun. So I'd highly recommend that, too. So,
dude, I don't know. There's something at WB that they just fucking make some good games.
They make great.
They do Dying Light.
Fun
they
open
did,
world games.
They did Dying Light. They did Arkham, all the Arkham games.
Yeah, they did both Mordors.
They did all of the Shadow Mordor games. They did Mad Max. Those guys just, I don't know, something over there.
Mad Max is fun. Yeah.
Okay. Here is the next episode that we're going to get from John Lipari.
April episodes.
This is the April episode. It is called Get Off My Lawn.
Okay.
For next month's episode, each bro is going to talk about aspects of gaming that they feel are worse now than they were when we were younger. Were strategy guides better than the internet for getting help? Does couch co-op have a special magic that online multiplayer could never match?
Yes.
Are mobile games a far cry from the dedicated handheld systems of the past? Check us out next month as we discover why some things should never change.
Oh, okay.
Spoiler alert.
Loved, so we're going to do like a good old
strategy
days.
Guide, but let's get real here.
Yeah.
The internet is so much
better.
It
really
to
is.
Figure stuff out quickly.
Although, I love a good strategy. Dude, Brady Games, I love
Resident
a good strategy
Evil
guide.
Evil 2 strategy guide that was like that. Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember being like, where is this stupid freaking blue crest? I can't even. Yeah.
Well, was there? Did
See,
they,
you never would have bought a strategy guide, Thomas.
I bought strategy
You seem like the kind of guy you're guides. Too proud to buy a strategy guide.
No. All right. So I will say the only guides that I owned were, I would usually buy a strategy guide with every Final Fantasy game.
Okay.
Because I'm just like, what am I going to do? Just like
fart
around and like this. You know, 100-hour game. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm a freaking kid. I need to.
I'm a freaking kid.
I need everything. I need it all.
Thomas thought I'm a freaking kid.
I need it, and I need it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I also really liked the strategy guide for Street Fighter Alpha 3. That was a...
Wow, what a reference. We have to go out on
strategy guides for fighting games are very nice.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us. If I don't cut Thomas off now, it might never end.
I'm just going to keep talking.
Yeah.
Just slowly mute him. Slow fade.
I'm still talking as the episode ends. Just.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us for the Open World episode. Bye.
Boom, boom.
Peace.